Okay, so you've formally taken on the Anagarika training, taken on the form, taken on the precepts, and you have the opportunity to experiment and work with the training, and you know it's important to recognize that. Having taken on a training, it's like a religious seeker. It's like one of the chants that we do. 10 reflections of one gone forth. The very first one: I am no longer living according to worldly aims and values. So that's it's an important reminder for us all the time that we're. We're not really in it for the, however the world gauges things, measures things, decides whether something is valuable or not valuable. That's not really the standard. Standard is more what the what is it that the Buddha figures is worthwhile for a valuable life, a way of living, living our life, and certainly the what is always front and center is refuges and precepts. It's easy to overlook that as being so basic that one doesn't. Take it seriously enough, because sometimes the scouring the suttas for some kind of esoteric knowledge or something incredibly special and forget refuges and precepts, or looking for some kind of trying to analyze and figure out all the nuances of the Abhidhamma, or as just refuges and precepts. Don't get lost. Don't get sidetracked. Trying to measure oneself according to some kind of idea that you have of meditative attainments. Refuges and precepts. Don't forget the foundations. Don't overlook or give short change to those foundations, as it's really that's where the mind becomes happy and peaceful. That's where the mind becomes attuned to training. And then also, really cultivating the fact, okay, I've taken on a training, I've taken on a monastic training. Developing that sense of samana sanya, the perception of being a religious seeker, perception of being a monastic. Certainly you're not going to find people dressed like this in Ukiah or San Francisco. So it's a reminder to yourself, but internally, we're really trying to cultivate that internal sense of being a religious seeker, one who has precepts, who has a training, and to hold oneself up and aspire to being a seeker. So that samana sanya is really, really important. Because say sanya is this perception. So how do we perceive things? So there's an interesting sutta where the Buddha says, what's the result of perception, and Of course, it's a rhetorical question, so he answers it immediately. But the result of perception is expression. So that expression in body, speech, and mind. So that when we hold a perception in our mind, especially if we hold it to something, you know, that perception, that memory, that association. Okay, I'm one who's has precepts, I have a training, I'm a religious seeker. What gets expressed is something that aligns with that. Or if, say, the expression, what comes out of our, you know, comes out of our mouth or comes out of our actions, all of a sudden you sort of, oh, that didn't really feel like something like substance. So it's a reminder. We're just really cultivating that sense of, and these are, we can use perception and use these perceptions. Of course, we can use those perceptions to torture ourselves, as if I should be like this, I should be like that. But it's like skillful use of the this natural, because, you know, we have perception. I mean, say we have body, feeling, perception, mental formations, consciousness. How do we use it skillfully? Or, you know, rather than letting ourselves, you know, let it drift into this sort of mental proliferation and complication. Using the perception, say being a someone, being a religious seeker, in order to encourage ourselves, and using that as a basis for our well-being, say like the, you know, living a religious life isn't necessarily associated with you know, being miserable and depressed. It's really about cultivating a happiness and brightness of heart, and freedom from suffering. That's the Buddha and just emphasizes over and over and over again. And that, you know, that he just teaches this suffering, cessation of suffering. This is the point. Of course, that's the point of his whole teaching. But and particularly as a samana, then we have the opportunity to really to live it day in, day out, to really embody. That opportunity to understand how that dukkha comes about and how to free ourselves. So it's a opportunity to really to fully engage oneself in that quest for samana is a the root is in a one who is peaceful, so that one who's truly peaceful is one who has the clarity and understanding, discernment to not get entangled in what is going to complicate the mind and make for more suffering. So as we try to remind ourselves of that, which is a function of perception, recollection, remembering, to remind ourselves of that. You know, it's good to remind ourselves of what are the fundamentals of a training. And so there's many suttas where the Buddha points to teachings for one who is newly gone forth But there's one that I particularly like. That is the Jinyangudra Fives. And it's, so of course it's five things for one who is newly gone forth. And first thing that the Buddha said, sila. Pay attention to sila, to virtue. And it's important to recognize that there's, of course, what constitutes the kind of nuts and bolts or the structure of sila are precepts. And you took the eight precepts. And of course, as you continue your training, and especially in this, it's the beginning of the Vasa period, and you'll join in the Vinaya instruction that we'll have over the next 3 months. You know, there's lots of rules that are applicable to, say, the Anagarika training as well as the Samanera training, the Bhikkhu training. But it isn't just for, learning how to be a compliant rule keeper. It's learning how to use the structure of the precepts in order to incline the heart or allow the heart to be well established in virtue. It's important to remember that, say, the word Vinaya, its literal meaning is that which leads out. It's not just sort of piling on more and more rules, but it's, what is it? What are the tools that lead us out from, say, lead us out from greed, hatred, and delusion, to really wholesome, virtuous qualities? Lead us out from suffering to happiness. Lead us out from confusion to peace. So that leading out, and then using the kind of the restraint of the form of the training precepts to help us to lead out, so that they say that just the first precept of not taking the life of any living creature. It's all about learning that quality of non-harming. As we are more and more well established in non-harming, then the natural quality that's elicited in the heart is compassion. So that's a quality that we want to be fostering, encouraging. And this similarly, the rest of the precepts are, you realize that it's a, yes, you have the kind of a rule, a precept, but it has a purpose. And of course that purpose is to lead us to these qualities of that are, yeah, they're bright. They're bright, they're peaceful, conducive to happiness. That's actually the, I'm trying to remember the idiom that the Buddha uses. The function of sila is, say, the sila that, when it's appropriately used, it's like the sila that is for the steadiness, firmness, happiness, freedom from doubt, leading to concentration, leading to steadiness. So I'd say they have this function. Learning how to have that understanding and commitment to training in the in the precepts, in virtue. Second quality that the second thing that the Buddha points to is sense restraint. So that when one's newly gone forth, because all of these apply to those of us who've been around for a long time as well. But particularly when you're taking on the training newly, then pay close attention to how to, aspects of virtue, aspects of sense restraint, how to have a clear sense of what's the sense contact, and what arises from sense contact, how to not just letting the mind and the senses, well, the mind is one of the senses, but they just sort of range over, being attracted, pulled, or being repelled by the things that one sees, hears, smells, tastes, touch, and experience with the mind. It's compelling, it's interesting, but it isn't very settling. It isn't conducive to a quality of clarity, stability. So that sense restraint, training in that sense restraint, and of course, what one requires as a fundamental base for sense restraint is mindfulness, having mindfulness. I think in the sutta, the Buddha uses something is having mindfulness as one's protector, so that when one inclines that attention to sense restraint, and there's a real interest in how do I hold that? It's mindfulness is what is the glue that holds it together, so and mindfulness is always a balancing faculty, that quality of mindfulness, a quality of attention that allows oneself to see and experience things clearly. Because the tendency of the range of sense contact is that. Push and pull, attraction and aversion, liking and disliking, dichotomies that kind of split the mind and leave one out of balance in some way. So that sense restraint based in this strong attention to keeping mindfulness as one's protector. Buddha then says also to, for one who is newly gone forth, to speak little. And of course, the faculty of speech is something that, on a certain level, peculiar to human beings. It allows us to be social creatures. It allows us to communicate. But when we're not really attentive or not really discerning, it gets us in a lot of trouble. The common disease of samanas or religious seekers without restraint, a common disease, a foot and mouth disease. It creates a problem. So that having restraint and learning how to use speech skillfully. It doesn't mean keeping silent all the time, but but it means, yeah, it's not acting on the first impulse to blurt whatever comes into your mind, to blurt it out. Not everybody needs to know what's going on in your mind. Well, holding it for a minute and saying, yeah, is this necessary? Is it useful? Is it beneficial? Is it helpful? And then that can, you know, certainly act on that if it is to speak. And then when one does that, that's one of the things that the Buddha said, that when speech is well considered, there's a real pleasing effect. It has a real powerful effect because it's speech that helps, it supports, it's something that is delightful to be a part of. So that training ourselves in speech, and all of these are trainings. You know, there's always the occasions when, you know, it's like we slip up on one of our precepts. We slip up on sense restraint. We slip up on speech. But we're also learning from that as well. That's part of the ethos of being a samana, is being willing to learn, willing to. It's like it's when we think of training, it's not just making some kind of a rigid training for ourselves, some kind of rigid regime that we try to force ourselves into, but being interested in learning from our experience. And that's what, say, the sikha, like when you're taking the precept, sikha, but the foundation for learning, foundation for education. So we're educating, we're learning, teaching ourselves, really. So this training is something that you're taking interest in. The fourth thing that the Buddha says is beneficial to for one who is newly gone forth to be attentive to, living in a quiet environment, living in a forest, living in a wilderness area, and we've got that, have that opportunity here. It's the nature of this, the environment here is one that is. We live in a forest. We've got the opportunity to be in a natural setting, so that's something to delight in. But also, we have to learn how to use that. So, when the chores are done, go back to your kuti in the forest, and you have that that environment that is quiet and has the reminders of nature. We finish our evening puja on a regular day. You go back to your kuti in the forest. You've got time for continuing one's walking meditation, sitting meditation. These are quiet places of practice. They're quiet places of developing the meditation, or having time for study, having solitude. It's important to learn how to live together in community, live together with others, learning how to interact skillfully. But it's important to learn how to be on our own, learn how to be happy in where we don't have to do something or get something or be something to be happy, but to just delighting in solitude, delighting in a natural environment, delighting in the opportunity to experience our own heart, our own mind. You know, that takes time. There's always going to be cycles of discontent, dissatisfaction, distraction, and that's ordinary. But again, taking the interest to learn from it, and that being in a having that environment, external circumstances are helpful. The last thing that the Buddha points to as a basis for what should be paid attention to as one newly gone forth is right view. Sammaditti, having the view that accords with truth. And when the Buddha speaks of right view, then he speaks of it in terms of like an ordinary right view, worldly right view, and he points to just the cause and condition, causal, that there is the results of our good actions, is the results of our bad actions. There are those who have practiced to realize truth, and it's something that can be done. So it's around just the fundamental law of karma, that there are actions and the results of actions. Actions in terms of body, speech, and mind, they have a result. Paying attention. If you want to experience happiness and peace, then there's appropriate causes to be cultivated and developed. Yeah, if you want to suffer and be miserable, there's the appropriate causes to put in. It'll play itself out. It isn't random. It isn't preordained. It isn't meted out by divine justice. It's how things work. So it's a fundamental right view on a worldly level. On a transcendent level, the Buddha describes right view as right view in terms of the Four Noble Truths. There is suffering, there is the cause of suffering, there is cessation of suffering, there is the path leading to cessation of suffering. And you think, how's that? And it seems, again, it's sort of, I thought that was sort of Buddhism 101, you know, just that Four Noble Truths, how can that be transcendent? Well, it's transcendent because it actually takes, it's starting to look at things without a self, without an I position, without a me position. Looking at things from an experiential basis rather than a personal basis. And when you look at things from an experiential basis, then you've got an opportunity to step out of the whole realm of complication. So that certainly as a samana, as one who's gone forth, we have this opportunity to live in a way that fulfills a transcendent right view. And right view isn't just an intellectual concept. It's how we live, how we experience things, how we apply our attention. So that it takes time to learn that. So that these five things to be attentive to for one's newly gone forth: virtue, sense restraint, speaking little, living in the forest, right view. You have to remind yourselves of that and bring it up, reflect on it, consider it. How do I fulfill the training? How do I live this training? How do I? Because it's especially as when this is the first day, it's easy to be gung ho on the first day, sort of. But it's after day after day, week after week, month after year after year. How do we keep a freshness? How do we keep a that samana sanya, being one who is a religious seeker? So that these paying attention to these different tools, learning how to apply them, learning how to reap the fruits of that, realize that there's the Buddha is not teaching this just to try to indoctrinate people or to give some kind of empty philosophical perspective. But he's giving us the tools to really experience peace, to live in a way that's truly peaceful. So I'll offer that for reflection. You can take it along. Also, one of the things in taking dependence you've formally taken dependence, you've made a commitment to the training, so that if you have doubts, difficulties, things coming up that you don't understand, don't see clearly, want to clarify, then I'm available. I'm here. Just avail yourself of that opportunity. Of course, also in taking dependence and taking on the training, and you also have the other. You're taking on a community. So you have the. Ajahn Khrundama, Ajahn Sudipala, Ajahn Yanikal, they're all here to help, along with everybody else. People are, it's a collective endeavor. Okay.